Today on Straight Talk Africa, the significance of the upcoming elections in Malawi, a discussion on whether Malawians will vote for continuity or change is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are having a conversation with Saulos Chilima, the Malawian Vice President, who is discussing the upcoming elections in Malawi. In less than 2 months, voters in Malawi head for elections. Political observers are predicting a very, very tight presidential race between President Peter Mutharika from the Democratic Progressive Party against his Vice President Saulos Chilima of the United Transformation Movement and Lazarus Chakwera with the Malawi Congress Party, the main opposition party. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
Campaigning in Malawi is underway. On May 21st, in addition to presidency, voters are set to cast their ballots for members of parliament and local councillors. The wealth and patronage networks of the three main political parties are driving the country's politics. President Peter Mutharika, Democratic Progressive Party, continues to tell his thousands of supporters he will continue to act on his election promises from his 2014 victory to rid Malawi of endemic corruption, fix the economy, and tackle violence against women and people with albinism. Mutharika enjoys the incumbency advantage. Opinion polls have forecast Mutharika's ruling party to win, but regular allegations of corruption could harbor his campaign, where reports of government graft are routine, but the government denies any allegations of corruption. Opposition and civil action groups claim that he and the ruling DPP received about $195,000 from a contractor supplying food rations to the police. This election pits President Peter Mutharika against Saulos Chilima. Political analysts say Chilima is seen as the biggest threat to Mutharika. Chilima quit the ruling party in July of 2018 in protest of alleged corruption. The former ally turned foe has launched a series of bitter attacks on the president and hopes to win power as the head of a new opposition party, the United Transformation Movement. Chilima told VOA in an interview that he no longer speaks to the president, and he alleges that corruption is worsening under the current administration.
Number one, I've got a constitutional obligation to serve out the term. And at this stage, as I'm sitting and talking to you, I have no reason to quit. I think that we would also be creating another interesting constitutional crisis.
Analysts say Chilima, 45, a wealthy businessman, could easily give Mutharika, 79, a tough battle. Meanwhile, former President Joyce Banda has dropped out of the race for president and plans to ally with Lazarus Chakwera, the presidential candidate for the Malawi Congress Party, the biggest opposition group.
I've withdrawn my candidature and gladly and positively endorsed the candidature of Dr. Lazarus Chakwera.
Her announcement could be a game changer ahead of the elections. But critics have questioned the alliance, saying it appears former President Banda is not politically loyal to any particular ideology. Lazarus Chakwera claims President Mutharika has failed Malawians in many areas, justifying the need for a new leader.
On democracy, President Mutharika has really been average. On economics, has been below average. If you look at on development, then he's been poor.
For voters in Malawi, the presidential election is critical, and a stronger leadership is vital. The nation is heavily dependent on foreign aid and is arguably one of the poorest countries on earth. Over 50% of the country's population live well below the poverty line. Agriculture accounts for one-third of its GDP, and 85% of its people survive on subsistence farming. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now, during a recent trip to Malawi, I had the opportunity to visit the Malawian Vice President, Saulos Chilima, who is also a presidential candidate representing an opposition group, the United Transformation Movement, challenging his boss, incumbent president, Arthur Peter Mutharika, for the highest position in the land, the presidency.
Mr. Saulos Chilima, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I am hugely terrific, especially because I have you here in an incredibly beautiful jacket.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
I gather that you have decided that you would like to be the occupant of the highest office in the land come next year.
Yes.
True?
Yes. But perhaps to say that the people have said so. And I've agreed.
In what way? Has there been a referendum or something of that sort?
Not a referendum, but there have been calls by different people for me to participate. So I've said, it's fine. I'll respond to their call very positively and participate in the race next year.
If I understand you correctly, Mr. Vice President, are you saying that this was not your initiative, but rather that, in fact, you reacted or responded to people who drafted you?
Yes. It's true that I personally had no intentions to contest, but people saw certain qualities in me that they thought qualified for the top office. And you know, the calls have been going on for the last couple of months, and eventually I said, fine, let's go for it. Here we are. We are you know, going ahead with that plan. The rest is history.
How was the relationship between you and the president during the last 4 years?
It was good.
It was good.
It was good because, you know, as we interacted and went about business, you know, whatever assignments I was given and I was reporting back, he was satisfied that he is a man that I had tasked to do certain jobs, and they were being done to the extent possible, and for as far, you know, as far as I recall, to his satisfaction.
You know as well, of course, as I do, that your constitution allows term limits.
Sure.
And therefore, the president was expected at least to try and serve the two terms.
Absolutely.
And in that particular case, you were expected to be a loyal soldier.
Absolutely.
Are you surprised, therefore, that some of the president's supporters are in fact calling you names to the extent that they are saying you are a traitor?
Well, first is that you're right. The Constitution provides for two terms. It is the prerogative of the president to choose a running mate. It is also true that there is name calling, and perhaps he who shouts the loudest is the one who is heard. It may not necessarily be that what they are shouting is the truth. Mm-hmm. I have, to the extent possible, tried to stay away from responding to these kinds of insults and allegations. I don't think that I would want to pursue that game. But posterity is going to judge us.
Why would you like to be president here? What makes you tick?
Yeah.
What would you do differently? Mm-hmm. What do you bring on the table?
Okay. First is that having served in office for the last 4 years, I have learned new things, how government ought to be run. I learned a lot of this during the time that I was chairman of the Reforms Commission. So that's number one. I have a very clear idea how things ought to be done in the civil service, looking at you know, the environment itself, how to motivate people, how to, you know, re-energize the system, because everybody says our civil service is not the same, but it can be re-energized. I have enough experience acquired over the 4 years on how to, first of all, resolve that engine. Second is our messaging in our organization today, and which is also what I subscribe to, is that there are certain fundamentals that ought to change if we are going to have a different outcome.
Fundamentals.
The type of politics that we practice. Yeah, we have politics of poverty here, politics of glorification here. The type of politics needs to change, because just about everything revolves around what happens in the political arena. Mm. And if we are going to continue to promote this slave master relationship, where people think they are presidents, and it doesn't, not just the incumbent, but I'm talking about presidents in general, mm-hmm. that the presidents must provide for the people, presidents must give them school fees, presidents must give them out-of-pocket allowances, etc. Mm-hmm. And they are the master, therefore they want to promote that individual to stay in that office for the longest possible period so they benefit. We are continuing to promote a situation where the majority, those that don't have access, will continue to suffer. I mean, the people are suffering in this country. There is serious poverty. I don't know how far you have traveled in this country, but from where we're sitting, if you picked any direction, you go 5-10 kilometers, you're going to see some serious poverty. And we needed, you know, to say, and it happens in other countries, where we need to promote what we call servant leadership. I am a servant of the people. We've talked about campaigning for 2019. What it basically is I'm going to be asking for a job, for people to employ me as a president of this country. When I win, I become their boss. It's very ironic, you know.
You're not a servant leader.
You're not a servant leader anymore. I think this is what we're trying to advocate to change. And we can do it, because some of us have resisted the temptation to be glorified. We want to remain the same. There must be human beings occupying these positions. Let's not create monsters, dinosaurs, to occupy the president's office. It's correct.
Someone once described democracy, and it was Abraham Lincoln of the United States, as a government of the people, by the people, mm-hmm. for the people.
Sure.
But there are some critics who have come out to say that most democracies in Africa mm-hmm. could probably be characterized as a government of some people, mm-hmm. by some people, for some people.
And I agree with those.
Really?
The latter. We need to go back to the origins. We need to have democracy in its original form, not what we are seeing today.
Who is in charge of Malawi? Who owns Malawi?
Well, it's the people, not certain individuals. All of us. I mean, there's 18 million of us right now.
Equal shares.
Well, I wish it was, I would put it in that manner, but we belong. I don't think that we can say we own, but we belong. We belong. And if belonging would be, construed the same as shareholding, then 18 million Malawians are shareholders of this country. Ideally, but they should have equal shares, but that's just ideally. The realities on the ground are different.
Joining us here in the studio to discuss the elections in Malawi is Alex Chantunya, a political analyst and a Malawian lawyer. Well, I have to say, Alex, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you. I'm also honored to be here, and I appreciate this opportunity.
We've been here in this town for many, many years, and yet we have never run into each other or crossed paths.
Yes, it's a big city. We may have seen each other, but it's a big city, a big town.
Now, you just listened to someone that obviously is familiar to you, and you are familiar to him, and he happens to be your country's vice president.
Yes, he is, and I know him. I've met him, just like I have met all the candidates. I know them all personally.
What kind of person is he?
He has shown some seriousness that he can do things, particularly when he was given a task regarding reformation of the government systems. He did some wonderful work. People were commending him, but I don't know what happened. He was reassigned to some other tasks.
When you say people were commending him, who would these people be?
In the newspapers. So I would say newspapers.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, when I had an interview with him, and he was so gracious, welcomed us at his very beautiful, vice presidential mansion in a beautiful Malawian capital, of course, of Lilongwe. He told us that he had actually been drafted by people to run for the highest position in the land, despite the fact that he remains vice president, and which would obviously imply that he has a boss who still is interested in keeping his number one job.
Yes, there was talk, which was even prompted by the president's own sister-in-law, who was suggesting that the president should step aside and allow the vice president to take over.
Are you talking about beautiful Calista?
Yes. So that's how the thing started. Now, I cannot tell the whole extent of how things started from there, but it was reported that she was the initial instigator who said, hey, step aside, leave the young man to take over.
You know as well as I do that when the word draft comes around, it could mean either something positive, meaning that, for example, if you are a very young, very uniquely athletically gifted basketball player in the United States or around the world, that could be a ticket to the NBA.
Yes.
To make millions of money and all that kind of stuff for your athletic skills.
Yes.
Yet it could mean, as we saw back in the 60s, when the United States was fighting in Vietnam, the government was recruiting college-going students to go and defend their country. In this particular case, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Malawians, in fact, drafting the vice president to actually go to combat?
I would say this is an English term, drafting, which in the context may not be understood differently by different people. I'm sure he understands it in a way that not everybody else can agree or disagree. So in legal terms, one would say, hey, this is a term subject to various interpretation. Others would agree with him that he was drafted, as suggested by his sister and the people who were following, to say stand in there. Others would say it's not, particularly those who are not aligned with the sister-in-law, may not necessarily agree. So I would say this is a difficult term that people can have various meanings or interpretations.
A different term, obviously, in a very interesting country, because when you look across the African continent, there are not so many countries, sincerely, where you would find this type of unique political tolerance.
I'm actually proud that Malawi is that unique, where you have a vice president competing, a minister competing, a former president competing, and even a Rasta was able to come up. Of course, he didn't make it to the list, but it was just a question of technical things. If he had the money to pay the 2 million kwacha and had the 10 signatures per district, he would have been allowed to stand. And right now there are 10 candidates. Not all of them are as well known as the four leading contenders, but everybody who thinks he has the money and he can get the signatures, he's definitely allowed to stand. So Malawi is unique because nobody stopped from standing for president.
Is this a foundation which was laid by founding president Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda on July 6, 1964?
I wouldn't say so, because from July 1964, we had a dictatorship.
You had a sort of one-party state.
One-party state.
Which was in vogue across the African continent.
Yes. And it was the circumstances before 1994, 1992, 1993, that created the environment from which the present circumstances have become to be observed and traditions, like
1994?
Yes.
You mean when founding President Kamuzu Banda was beaten by Bakili Muluzi?
Actually, the first step that happened was a multi-party referendum.
Correct.
Dr. Banda
lost it.
He lost the multi-party. But the
he was also rumored, in fact, to be brain dead.
Well, he was walking around and speaking, so I don't think.
But he had undergone some kind of operation also in South African hospitals.
Yes, but he had the command of these people, because some of his followers didn't want Banda to accept the results of the Mati Party.
Are you talking about people like John Tembo?
I can't be mentioning the names because I wasn't in the room to see who was. But some people didn't want Banda to accept the results. But Banda, despite misgivings about his human rights record, accepted the results of the referendum.
Conceded defeat with grace.
Yes.
And offered, in fact, even to provide his services to the new authorities in whatever way they saw fit.
Yes, he even facilitated the elections, the post-referendum elections. So even people who
and accepted defeat.
In the yes, in
and
the,
you have a continent today, in 2019, where there are some individual rulers on the continent who say they cannot leave power, for example, on the basis of a piece of paper.
Yes. And one of the greatest things, which many people don't discuss, the greatest thing that Banda did was accepting defeat. He set up a precedent where a leader could accept a defeat. And we have seen that being maintained. Like President Mlozi wanted a third term. He wanted it so badly, he wanted it. He said people wanted him to have a third term.
Right.
But when there was voting in parliament and he lost the vote, he accepted the result.
By one vote, was it?
Yes.
By one vote?
Yes. So he too contributed to this idea that leaders, when you lose, just like Banda did, when you lose, you must accept the result. So Banda was great, he accepted loss. Mlozi was also great, he accepted loss.
Mlozi is an officer and a gentleman. If I were looking back to my military experience, would call him an officer and a gentleman. I remember actually meeting him in the commercial capital of Malawi, Blantyre. He gave a luncheon in my honor.
Oh, great.
He's living a great life. We had a great interview, and he had a great message for people who were his colleagues. He basically said he could actually assure them that there is life after the presidency.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yes, indeed, it's nice that he is able to be narrating that story so that any of the leaders, particularly in Malawi, can look at him to say, oh, there's life after politics. So that was a great thing that he said.
In fact, another president in neighboring Zambia, a man called Mr. Banda. You remember?
Yes, yes.
Mr. Banda?
Mm-hmm.
He also said that when he lost the election, Rupia Banda lost the election to Michael Sata at the time.
Yes.
He said he considered defeat with grace, and he says from that time, he used to have some very high temperatures in terms of, blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
He now enjoys his retirement, really. He had a good time. And I told him, I said, you know what? It was, in fact, not a defeat.
Yes.
It was a victory for African democracy.
Yes, indeed, yes.
A victory for the people of Zambia.
Zambia.
And you definitely made Africa very democratically proud.
Yes.
Interesting. I gather that time is not Abbas ally. I have to follow the orders of the producer. Now, let's go to part two of my interview in the Malawian capital, Lilongwe, with Vice President Saulos Chilima.
Would it be fair to say that Malawians are citizens, meaning they owe allegiance to the state, and therefore they have constitutional rights, inalienable rights, in fact, birthrights, and therefore they employ the president or the public officials rather than the other way around? Or are they in fact subjects owing allegiance to an individual authority with no constitutional rights, except that they may in fact in the end be granted with the privileges by that particular individual authority?
You see, citizens, yes. Obligated by the constitution, yes, and there are rights in there. And what we see today is what I was describing earlier on, that we, over time, have created a slave-master relationship. So yes, they'll put presidents. It's not just, we shouldn't be obsessed with the presidency. I think it's members of parliament and also councillors. These are appointed, voted into office, in essence elected into office, or hired or employed by the citizens, the people of Malawi. And again, it's not everybody. Maybe as you descend down the strata from presidency to members of parliament to councillors, you begin to get different approaches from different individuals. There are certain members of parliament that would be great, I mean, with their constituents. But what we are up against is that the people should be subjects. And this is why I'm saying we need to change the type of politics. Who changes it? it is the one who occupies the office. To begin to say, some of these attachments are not necessary. These frills that surround this office are not necessary. We shouldn't be subsumed into saying, oh, by the way, this is the way things have been done in the last 54 years. We should begin to look at, the style of doing things differently. We should advocate for meaningful and genuine change in approach. And that's the advocacy that we bring today. Well, we should have leaders that can first and foremost check themselves to say, when I was campaigning, I promised 1, 2, 3, 4 things. Is this exactly what is it? It's not promising development, but it's promising to change presidential powers, appointing powers of the president in hiring top civil servants, etc., etc. Why should that still be the case today, when back then we said we'd be changing some of those provisions in the law to empower certain officers or certain agencies within the country to be responsible for hiring of civil servants. So that's just by one example. So, yes, one would say we promised we were going to build you a road and I was going to buy you a nice suit like you're wearing today.
Yes.
That's fine. But I should also say, what did I promise I would do sitting in this office so that the office becomes different?
Do you have the rule of law?
Here?
In Malawi?
No, we do. We do.
Is it rule by law?
No. The rule of law is there. I think we are not bad.
What would you say is the single most important decision that you made during your vice presidency? And what about the single most regrettable decision during the same period?
I would put retention of staff in my office as a good thing, because the ones that I started with in 2014, I still have them today. The chemistry is good, and also that I have tried to motivate where I must, as we continue, we are still one unit, which is for me a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
Regrettable? None. I don't regret any decision that I made.
You've been very critical of the government and the president in terms of the handling of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes.
And yet, you have actually been the number two man in that particular government.
Mm-hmm.
The question that I can ask you now is, what did you know about that type of corruption, and when did you know it?
Yes, you're right. I am critical of the way this is being handled. And over the years, I have spoken about it. And I'm continuing to do so. Maybe now, because we are, it's more prominent, because I'm standing on the side, it doesn't mean that I didn't speak about it before. I presented a paper, I delivered a public lecture at the University of Malawi. It was on moral decadence. This was at the launch of the ethics department, in ethics program in the Masters in Ethics at Chansa College.
Mm-hmm.
This was last year. I was highlighting the same things. I have condemned when I am champion of the Construction Sector Transparency Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
When we had sessions, I have spoken against corruption in the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
Working with my colleagues in that organization, we have fined, we have blacklisted contractors that we thought were doing substandard jobs and therefore shortchanging the government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are things that we have done. It's not as if I've just woken up all of a sudden and started preaching against it.
Mm-hmm.
We have condemned. And by the way, I mean, there's nobody who says there's no corruption in this country. Everybody agrees. I mean, that's why we commemorate, there is Anti-Corruption Day, there is the Bureau. The reason it is established is because we must fight that vice. But we need to do it a lot more emphatically so that we set examples and we stop it.
Let's talk about the vision thing. What is your vision for Malawi?
We look at a country that should become middle income. And I would say that you want a citizen who has 3 meals a day.
I like that.
Has got a decent house to live in. And has, you know, some either piece of land or some business, you know, to earn a decent living and send their children to school.
That sounds like political utopia. You are describing pretty much what is the Netherlands, really. What
sure.
is the Scandinavian countries and what have you.
Absolutely.
Governments which put the people or their people at the center.
Sure.
I like that.
And this is what we should strive to become.
How can you accomplish that? Where do you get the resources, the money from, for example?
And this is why we are fighting. We have to fight. Remember I said fundamentals first?
Yes.
Let's correct the politics. Let's root out corruption. Let's sort out these nepotistic tendencies. We'll find that there is enough for everybody. We collect enough resources, tax and non-tax revenue, to drive certain of our own programs. Mm. We do have collaborating partners that assist. It could be NGOs, international NGOs. It could be our donor partners. It could be the churches or religious organizations that have, you know, participated in national development. Religious organizations have built schools. They have built hospitals. You know, they have assisted orphanages. The complementary efforts by these other people should come on a sound base that the government itself is doing the right things. And I am saying, if we stopped the leakage, if we drained the swamp and we dealt with corruption,
you are reminding me of an American presidential candidate.
We would
about draining the swamp.
Absolutely. So we would surely achieve this, and then you can prescribe over what period, because you start, you remember I was talking about 5 kilometers from where we're sitting,
right?
If there are settlements just outside this fence that do not fit the definition of a capital city, it should be the responsibility of government to provide decent accommodation to those people, because they are renting anyway. But what they're renting today is not decent enough. It's because they cannot afford. And we have seen this happening elsewhere. Ethiopia is a case in point. We've seen high-rise buildings, high-rise apartments where people are renting and with the possibility to own. But really, wishing for a fellow citizen to have 3 meals a day is not asking for the moon. I mean, it's basic human right, and this is what people should be entitled to.
I have to say that it has been a pleasure for me to have the opportunity to interact with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And today we are talking about Saulos Chilima and the upcoming Malawi elections on May 21st. Joining me here, of course, today is Alex Chantunya, a political analyst and Malawian lawyer. I have to say once again that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thanks very much. As I said, I am also honored and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to discuss the most exciting times in my country.
Your country's history.
Yes.
Now, Alex, it looks like we were watching and listening to a man who someone would probably legitimately characterize as an advocate of social, economic, political justice for all Malawians. True?
Yes, I would say so.
He talks the talk, but if given the opportunity, do you think he could in fact walk the talk?
Well, I would think so. just like the other candidates too, I can't rule them out. They are all talking good. The test is in the pudding. One of these has to make it, and one of them will produce the result with the blessing of the people of Malawi. And people are listening to their ideas, and they are evaluating. I trust the people who choose the most capable people from the vice president, and then the Lazarus Chakwera.
Malawi Congress Party.
Yes, of Malawi Congress Party. Also,
Professor Arthur
Mutalika. And Atupere of Muluzi of UDA.
Atupere Muluzi.
And there are others too. There are six. But the four, these four are the main.
The front runners.
They are the front runners. I think even the others acknowledge that these four are the front runners.
Now, Alex, there is a saying that when politicians are seeking office, they are running for office, they tend to campaign in poetry. They promise heaven on earth. But that when they get the opportunity to occupy those offices, it becomes the business of governing. And that when it comes to the business of governing, that one they do in prose.
That's a nice way of putting it, yes. One thing I would say is it's easy to make campaign promises. And everybody making the promises don't take into account what is on in government coffers. Or they don't discuss how they will generate the money. But the good thing for the candidates is that the electorate doesn't ask the question, how are you going to pay for it?
No.
Actually, the electorate looks to see who is promising most and who is promising something more attractive. And of course, they assess, can he deliver on the promises?
Now, as we talk, of course, you do have some kind of catastrophe in your country and the surrounding countries of Mozambique and Zimbabwe. We're talking about a cyclone. To what extent could this be a great opportunity for the incumbent president, Professor Mutharika, or a real, real problem, depending, of course, on how he handles the situation with regards to the victims of the cyclone? You know, perception, of course, can be reality in politics.
Yes.
Is this a great opportunity for him, or is it a great problem?
This is a blessing and a curse. And I have seen the politicians have tried to be smart. They are saying, let's not politicize this disaster. But people are people. They will have to manage expectations, because each, whether the opposition or whether the government, if they are not careful on how they manage people's expectations, they will live to regret. They have to deliver promises or help which they can deliver.
But for the president, there is a law which says, prohibits, for example, the ruling party to use government resources, government tools for political campaign. Where drew the line, really, between President Arthur Peter Mutharika and candidate Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika in this particular case?
I think it would be very difficult to draw the line. People cannot see the difference. They will simply see him as a president. And the other thing which happens is oftentimes the cabinet is not dissolved. So the ministers continue using and utilizing government resources in whatever they do.
Very interesting. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, and that is the telephone callers. And I gather that I do have someone by the name Mugabe from Uganda. Good evening, Mugabe. Mugabe, good evening. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm afraid he does not seem to be hearing me or getting me. There are some technical difficulties, so we can go back to what we were talking about. Now, talking about campaigning, you also, of course, know that there was a huge political endorsement from a former Malawian president, Madame Joyce Banda. She gave a nod to Mr. Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party. To what extent would this type of endorsement really make a difference?
Truly, many Malawians are confounded. They are not sure what impact it has. But on the surface, it seems like, okay, it is going to give Mr. Chakwera a boost, Reverend Chakwera a boost. Some are saying Ms. Joyce Banda had a big following in the North. By withdrawing, it has given an opportunity for the Vice President, South Chilima, to gather more votes than he would have if Ms. Banda...
Does she have that kind of Teflon effect? Can she, in fact, transfer that support literally to Mr. Chakwera?
Ironically, it's not everyone in the PP, Ms. Joyce Banda party, who is agreeing with the decision to align with MCP. But there are some that was raising questions that should, once if a leader becomes a follower, should the followers follow the follower, or should they follow, should they just be on their own to make their own decisions?
So it could actually even end up being symbolic at best?
Well, it has definitely given some boost to Mr. Chakwera to get additional votes. It may be some percentages, because like Reverend Lazarus Chakwera, in 2014, he did so badly in the southern region because he got something like 3%. So definitely this time, without Ms. Banda competing, and maybe with Ms. Banda's endorsement, he's definitely going to improve from that 3%. Of course, he has recruited some prominent figure from the South, Mr. Mia. That may boost him by a certain percentage. The problem that happened in 2014 was in the center, the Reverend Chakwera, scored something like close to 58% or 60%. But Peter Mutharika managed to get 20%. So going to the south, Reverend Chakwera did not perform as well, getting 3%. So that accounted for some big differences.
So it could make a difference?
It could. But right now, people are saying they don't know where this thing is going.
I see.
And the 60 days which have started, any party which is complacent may be surprised with a loss. But every party has to work hard to win if they have to win.
Again, I'm afraid time is not of this ally. Let's go for the let's go to, let's pretty much go for the lifeline of the show, which is supposed to be the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick, from the most populous nation in Africa, and that, of course, is Nigeria. How are you, Patrick?
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, our guest in this studio.
I am hugely terrific.
Mr. Shaka, sir, I want to find out from our guest. Moral decadence, as we rightly know, is getting out of proportion with other vices in the society. And the youth of today, they are being involved, and the same youth are being tagged as the leaders of tomorrow. And the same youth are being used to rig election and cause other confusion in any place where there is election. Now, my question to our guest, what is society doing to stop all these vices where the youth that are supposed to be leaders of tomorrow have been involved in such acts of election rigging and kind of election boxes? Every day you'll be seeing this on the screen. You start wondering, do the youth have future? Thank you very much, Mr. Shaka. We love what you're doing for Africans.
Profoundly honored for your compliments and support, Patrick. What about you, Alex?
Yes, in Malawi, there have been a big number of youth who have registered. And most of them are excited. Whether they will come to voting, that's another thing. They have to be excited and induced to come to vote.
What about the campaign strategy or tactic of, for example, Saulos Chilima, which is apparently having him going door to door?
Yes, this is something new in Malawi. And the irony in Malawi, when somebody starts something which they think is working, everybody else follows. So it looks like some are beginning to follow what Chilima is doing. But he has perfected it. And I think Chilima is doing it so well and has to do it because his party is not a household name, hasn't been there for a long time.
And probably has no structures, really.
That's the criticism. But he is countering by saying, we'll make up for whatever they say we don't have structures by this tactic of going campaign to campaign, door to door. Yeah. And
what about the changing demographics, which seems to weigh in his favor?
The youth, most of them are not employed. But in Malawi, it's always very difficult to predict which way people are going, because when there is a mass rally, there will be a big crowd.
Yes.
When that leader is gone, another one comes.
Yes.
There will be another big crowd. It's the same people. And some even joke that the women have clothes for each political party. So when they see it's a leader this is coming, they will change, wear a party cloth for that party. I think we are yet to see how things are going to happen. The caller mentioned about rigging. He asked the situation about rigging. Well, there was like kind of commotion in 2014 because there was belief there was some rigging. Now, right now, the electoral body, is making all attempts to make the election system transparent. And they have even devised a mechanism for complaints so that the complaints should be addressed timely and not let until the end.
Let's be a little bit more democratic and inclusive. And for that, let's go to the lifeline of the show again, the telephone callers. Good evening, Mr. Mugabe from Uganda. I gather you're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Mr. Mugabe, are you there?
Yes, I'm around. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. What about you?
I'm fine. I'm coming from South Sudan, Uganda, in Kanungu. Now, I have a comment to make on corruption. In most cases, presidential aspirants come talking about corruption, and when they are elected into office, you find corruption escalates. How are they going to make sure that this corruption is decisively defeated? Number two, the lives of people of Marawi, how are you going to increase the food security in the midst of climate change, which is a global problem?
Thank you very much. What about that, Alex?
Corruption has been a major issue, just like the Vice President conceded. Everybody in Malawi,
But you are a society of, essentially, really, society of laws.
Yes.
Because, in fact, I was heard someone jokingly referring to the Malawian judiciary system as essentially a judicial dictatorship.
I wouldn't say it's a dictatorship, but it's very independent.
Fiercely independent.
Fiercely independent.
I say that advisedly because at one time I remember in my interview with the then Nigerian president, General Olusegun Obasanjo, retired but certainly not tired, I remember him telling me about media. What he characterized as media dictatorship, simply because we seemed to be very, very free in terms of at least seeking for accountability.
Yes. I would say media maybe is in everybody's face every day, whereas the judiciary deals with the problems as they come up. And therefore, it's not like challenged every day to make decisions which impact people. But for Malawi, I would say the judiciary have had an upper hand. And it's all historical in context because right from the change of Matipati, when we became Matipati, there was a clash one time whereby the governing party wanted to impeach some judges because they were not towing or were seen to be against the government.
The party line.
Yes. But the judiciary prevailed. And since that time, they have been so independent.
So even you really have inbuilt reasonable checks and balances.
Oh, yes. And in fact, if the politicians want to arrest somebody, maybe if they want somebody to spend a night in jail, they will maybe arrest him on a Friday.
But what about freedom of expression? Because so far we haven't received any call from the Republic of Malawi.
I don't know what time it is, but the Malawians are very active. I don't know what it is.
It is. It's between 8 and 9 p.m. in your region.
Yeah. Well, Malawians on social media, they are very critical. They criticize each leader.
Unfortunately, Alex, time happens not to be our best ally, and no democracy here. On that note, my guest today was Alex Chantunya, a political analyst and Malawian lawyer. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Malawi. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.
Yes.